Hello, everyone. I'm Jay, and this is Highbrow Theater, a podcast where we analyze theater so you don't have to. Today, we will be discussing the art of improv, and in the spirit of it, I barely made an outline to keep things interesting. To help with this topic, we have an internet friend chiming in from the Lone Star State. Please welcome Blake Reinhardt. Hello, Blake.
Hey there, Jay. How are you tonight?
I'm just dandy. How about yourself?
You know, I'm doing pretty well. I've got a delicious bourbon in front of me here, kind of mixed with some sugar and orange and bitters to make an old fashioned. It's really poorly done, but it's tasty.
As long as it tastes good. Mm-hmm. I feel like, because I've bartended for a while, an old fashioned is a man, capital M man thing, you know? Like, it's such a, and people are so particular. Are you particular about it when you order it?
I don't think so. Actually, here in Austin, there's a lot of different bars that make their varying old-fashioned types. And I tend to enjoy all of them. There's some that are made with different liquors, so not always bourbon. Sometimes they have their fruit in there. You know, like, I like the little black cherry, but I don't require it. And I wouldn't say I'm super particular about it because I enjoy just trying new things and having that experience. So, I think if you've seen me, you've seen, I mean, I look like Tormund from Game of Thrones. So it's not too far off in terms of that capital M, I suppose.
I love it. Okay. I'm going to start with some introductory things about you to help let the audience get to know you a little better. So let's talk about how we know each other, because it just kind of happened a little bit through other people, and then we were there.
Yeah. So did you actually play Rust when they were playing Rust at all?
I did. Just a little bit. Wasn't my jive.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a lot of people's jives. It's a very intense game, I suppose. So,
would you mind explaining what Rust is for maybe somebody who doesn't know?
Absolutely. So Rust is a video game that takes place across multiple servers. The servers usually hold anywhere from 200 to 300 people. And it's highly, volatile. It's very PvP centric. Everybody is warring against everybody. And so it's it's basically like Lord of the Flies, the video game. How about that? And surprisingly, you can meet some amazing people from it. And that's how I met you and the group of people that you play games with. I randomly dropped in on them quite literally from the sky and was playing my sweet tuba. And I met Boyan, who's another mutual friend of ours, and a couple other folks.
Other than video games, which I feel like have been a great escape from these unprecedented times. What have you been up to?
I would say a number of different hobbies. I think one of the biggest ones, I suppose this one's a new hobby for me, but working on our home. My wife and I just bought our home about a year ago. And so we've been working on not only the upkeep of it, but building new things inside of it, shelving, painting, all that sort of thing. I also paint miniatures for war games like Warhammer 40K. So it's just kind of a more quiet hobby. And I also love to watch film and TV, like any film and TV. So sometimes I do those in conjunction with one another. Maybe I'm painting and I'll watch some old episodes of a TV show that I haven't seen lately. It's been Star Trek, The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And so that, and then there's some weightlifting mixed in there, and yeah, that's pretty much it. And gaming.
And gaming. Right.
Lots of games.
I also heard that you recently got a new appliance.
Oh, yes.
For your home.
Oh, goodness. I'm gushing over here. Yeah. Oh, yes. Let me brag about our new dishwasher.
Oh, that's kind of hot, though.
It's funny because the one we had before was so bad that it's absolutely the case that I was the dishwasher, right? Like, you just want to do everything manually, especially because the old one would just accrue this food, and it was disgusting. It was absolutely awful. So the new one is not supposed to do that, and it's got some other features. Like, this is just so unnecessary, but it will display the time left on the floor. Like, who needs that? Who really needs that? I do, I guess.
Little children, yeah. They're walking by, maybe, learning countdown time in class. Now, interacting with you, you're a pretty funny guy, I'll go to say.
Oh, I bet that was hard to say there, wasn't it, Jay?
I had to mute myself while I dry heaved. Where does that come from? Like, do you come from a family of funny people? I know a lot of humor, we don't have to talk, but like bad experiences can kind of get turned into funny to kind of deal with it. So where does your hilarity come from?
That's a really good question. I would say probably 3 to 4 primary sources. And I would say the first one would be my father. My father was always a really funny, or he is just a really witty guy. And he encouraged that wit. He encouraged reading in us, which I suppose that would be a fifth thing if I were to add reading to this. But he's just so quick on quips. And a big part of my family, the way that we kind of show our love to people that we really care about and to each other, is by teasing each other, teasing one another. And you have to be really quick on the uptake when that happens. Mm-hmm. I would say another major one for me was Mystery Science Theater. I love MST3K. And we never had it as a kid, so we would have to go to our grandparents' house who had cable and watch Mystery Science Theater, and it was amazing. And I just really loved that kind of riffing on a film, that often dry humor, but it also has a lot of injection of pop culture inside the humor. It's funny, if you go watch an older episode now, it's sometimes hard to watch because they'll make references that you just would not get, right?
Yeah.
And so that can be a little bit rough. But the third would probably be the Muppets. And I grew up with the Muppets. I love the Muppets. I love everything Jim Henson. I actually worked with the lady who was Red Fraggle, Karen Prell. She worked at Valve with me, and she was awesome. And she would, I would just sit there enthralled when she would tell me these stories of working with David Bowie and working with Jim Henson, who is a personal hero of mine, and just loving it. And I know I said a fourth one, and I don't even remember what it was. So we'll just say reading. Just kind of, I think it's a really important thing to just read often in general. And I think it's a natural thing with humor. It obviously helps your vocabulary for one, but I don't know, especially Shakespeare, who I think is particularly funny in a lot of what he's writing. I think you find a lot of humor in that. And just in books in general. So, but my father, MST3K, and the Muppets would probably be the top three.
That's so whimsical. I love that. Now, speaking of Valve, your main career, I'll say it's not the closest thing to the performing arts. If you don't mind saying what you do.
No, yeah, no problem. So I am a global lead of support for a small software company here in Austin, Texas. And so that entails some very heavy technical pieces. I'm constantly dealing with and trying to answer, technical questions for our product, helping individuals with their problems. And the product itself, it's not terribly exciting. It's an HR software program. And that's not to bash anybody in HR. It's just a case management tool, right? So we're not talking about, anything that Elon Musk would mess with or anything, but it's...
Thank God.
Yes. But it's still very technical. It requires a lot of expertise in that particular area. And I do talk to a lot of people, which I suppose there might be a little bit of some theatrics involved with that, especially when you're finessing an individual who might be frustrated or dealing with some sort of more irate scenario where somebody might be upset or mad about something not working quite right. There's some training aspects involved. I've traveled with it before too. So I went to Slovakia and London, both as part of the job to go train some different companies and things like that, which was really cool. And anytime I think you're in front of a person, there's that natural need to, in a way, it's taking over the room, I think, is part of it, but also just the theatrics of trying to talk to people. So there's a little bit of that, I suppose. But yeah, it's definitely not. Interestingly, that's actually how I got into improv, though. So,
oh, what a segue. Are you a mall cop transportation?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah. And side effect of that, I fell off a cliff as well. So
physically?
The guy who created the Segway, I believe, and you should fact check me on this, but don't tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm going to tell the story anyway. He supposedly died on his own device by falling off a cliff. So.
Oh, okay. I'll fact check it, and then I'll put in a corresponding sound. Tomorrow, right. When I'm at it.
Great. Yeah, like a Price is Right or Wrong thing. Yeah.
Yeah, kind
of. Oh, I was going to say, it was a friend of mine. So I got my current job through a guy that I actually knew from Kansas, which is where I'm from. And he went to school with my brother. And he was really interested in finding some ways in which our team, which was a highly technical programming development team, for us to bond. And so one of the things that we went and looked at was an improv class. He was also doing this thing at the time where he was just trying a whole bunch of different stuff to see what kind of stuck in his life. One of those yearly challenges, if you've ever seen those, some people will go like Meatless March and things like that. And he was like, hey, Blake, will you go to this improv class with me? It's just a free event. And then after that, people might sign up or not. And I was like, yeah, of course. So this highly technical individual invites me to this event that's improv, and I had a blast. We had so much fun at the event. It was like an hour and a half, 2 hour long, kind of an introductory to improv, doing name games and things like that. And after that, it stuck in me. It was like, this is a lot of fun. This is a hobby that brings out a lot of my old high school life. I want to do this. So I stuck with it.
That's wonderful. Oh, well, I'm glad that you had transferable skills, if anyone who wants to cut arts budget is listening, that you can put that into your job. So you are into World of Warcraft, which is a MMORPG, which is massive multiplayer online role-playing game. Let's emphasize on the role-playing part. Do you think that there are any transferable things between WoW and improv?
Yeah, I think so. I'm also really big into Dungeons and Dragons, and
oh yeah,
I both play in DM D&D, and I think that they're, especially with D&D, it's 100% transferable. With World of Warcraft, there was a period there in my life where I was playing on a role playing server. I think for the role-playing aspects, I wasn't so big into it because I didn't necessarily care about the lore set of WoW or the World of Warcraft too much. I will say when it comes to the raid-leading aspect and trying to explain things to individuals in a way that makes sense, there's definitely a lot of improv involved there. And you could even say when you're learning a new fight, when I mean new fight, maybe you're fighting some sort of giant boss or something. And they might be doing different things. You might have to come up with a new strategy if you're dying over and over again. Your group is wiping or losing the fight. Maybe you have to make a quick switch or an improv. Well, so with D&D, both being the dungeon master as well as being a player, there's a lot of improv that comes into play with that too. And it's a ton of fun. I mean, improv, I think it just goes hand in hand with it, especially when you're talking to another player, they have some sort of event that's going on, they're talking back to you. You want to make sure that you're playing off of each other and also encouraging that kind of fair play. That's one of the biggest things about improv, is going with the flow and making sure that you're not stopping the scene.
Let's get into the yes and of it all, because I think that is rule number one in improv, like you said, is to not stop the scene, and you take it in and then keep pushing forward, because that encourages further play in the moment. And yeah, everyone can tell when it gets uncomfy when you just kind of downplay what's going on.
Right. Yeah. So yes anding, of course, is where you're on the stage. Let's say Jay walks up to me and he's like, "Stop, I have a gun." If I didn't yes and that, it would be like, "No, you don't. It's not a gun in your hand. What are you talking about?" And it really puts a halt to the scene and to the event, right? So
Yeah.
yes and is this principle that you agree with and heighten, not just agree with, but heighten whatever it is the other person comes out and says. And it really makes a scene flow. We've had, I mean, I was thinking about back when I was doing one of my student showcases, we had some scenes that were just incredible. And it's all because of that heightening, the agreeing with what's being played with, and then heightening the whole thing to the next level. And it can really make these. There's a thing about improv where you could describe a story that happened, like an improv event that happened, and people are like, "That's just that sounds great, wonderful." You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
but the actual scene, the entire theater was just rolling because it was just so much fun and funny. And D&D is like that too, just kind of tracing back to that. You want to make sure that you're doing that yes and so that you're kind of furthering the story or the plot of what's ever happening in the world. So. Yeah, it's one of the most basic rules and tools of improv when you have that improv toolbox. So.
Right. Now, in your own words, what is improv, if we can kind of be generalized about it?
Oh, Jay, what, how is improv?
How, why, who?
When is improv?
Look at us. We're doing
we're playing off each other.
it. Oh.
Oh, that's a good question. I think for in terms of theater, I mean, what's great about it is that it can be anything, really. There's so many shows, especially here in Austin, there are about four or five different theaters that do different improv shows, and they will actually have a specific subset. Like they might do improv that's specifically based off of a mystery, and maybe they just ask the audience members, you know, how they want to further that. But improv, I think, is essentially acting or performing without a script in front of individuals. It doesn't necessarily have to be funny. There's a lot of improv that's a little bit more serious. The tone is more based in serious issues and tones. It can be funny. There's a lot of improv games, which I think are really, really fun. Audience members tend to have a lot of fun with those too. I think the more famous version of that that a lot of people might know of is Whose Line Is It Anyway, which is definitely a great show. Those guys are professionals. I mean, when it comes to improv, you could give them a paper bag and they would make you laugh just because you gave them a paper bag, right?
Yeah.
But I think the basic subset or the basic principle would be performing in front of an audience without a script. And yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much it. You're coming up with it on your own. It tends to be in a lot of improv shows and a lot of improv films, mockumentaries, things like that, that you have an idea of what you're trying to get out, some sort of end goal. But that's not always the case. So.
I also think it's interesting that improv is a subgenre of theater where the audience, you acknowledge them. You know, a lot
Yes.
of it is like they just happen to be a part of it. They just happen to be there, you know, like they're just spectators. But improv, it's like they kind of almost lead it in a way where they give you the topic, you know.
Yes, yeah. You know, in a lot of theater, there might be some times where the story breaks the fourth wall. Shakespeare was really famous for that, right? Where you'd have that breaking of the fourth wall every now and then, where a character would talk to the audience. In improv, that's all it is. There's just a fourth wall there. Well, I guess it's constantly broken, I suppose. You're throwing the bricks of the fourth wall at the audience.
And it's almost like they're part of, like, even separate from the giving out a topic, you as a performer have to keep them in mind the entire time because you have to keep their trust in their suggestions, because if you don't, then they're not going to want to like do anything or enjoy themselves.
Right. Yes. And it could be really hard, actually, especially when they give you some really wild suggestions. But it's almost more like a comedian, if that makes any sense. Because comedians, I think, also encourage, or they're actively engaged with the audience, right? They're telling their story. You know, there's the whole thing when you're doing comedian acts where if somebody is trolling you, you actually make them part of the show. That's the better way of dealing with individuals who are like that, however you might deal with them or make them part of the show. It's the same thing with improv. And it can be really hard. It can be especially hard when you just can't think of anything at the top of your head to do.
Yeah. So. Like my very first collegiate show, there was like the scripted group and then the improv group. And I was a part of the improv group in front of like people who have been doing it and like college professors. And I was just like, this is terrifying. But I think it actually kind of helped. I guess it, bringing it personally, it kind of helped me develop people skills.
Yeah.
I guess because I wasn't very good at meeting new people and keeping a conversation going. And because I just like freak out and because I didn't want to like come off as weird. But improv, you almost have to be weird a little bit. So yes. It just kind of broke down all those walls.
How many times have you done improv yourself?
I guess I was going to say a lot, but that's also relative. I have, we'll say.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that it does it's really good, especially because I think a big part of it is listening to your fellow players, right?
Yeah.
We don't call them actors. We call them players because we're playing a game with them typically or whatever. And the having to listen to them and play off of them, and also kind of, it almost sometimes feels like a dance where you have to pay attention to the steps that they're doing to kind of pick up on what they're doing. And you'll find that some of the best improv players, they can play with anybody. It doesn't matter how flat. You get this a lot when you're doing the classes. You might restart a class, or maybe you're just doing one of the, we had some shows that individuals who might have been 1 years or folks that were kind of new could jump into. And you really can tell those players who can bring other people in and just make anything they say funny. And it's almost just putting the focus on that other person. And you're right. A big part of that is learning how to talk to them and bring out those qualities, right?
Yeah. I also think that somebody told me once that the most important thing in that, one of the most important things in that kind of environment, is to make your scene partner look good.
Yes.
Like, don't focus on you, because that building that relationship is super important, because it's like a giant trust exercise.
Yeah, it's 100% the case. And I also think that when you're building that other person up and making them look good, it makes the scene more fun. Because you're not focusing on yourself. I think the audience members can pick up really quickly when improv starts to go south. And I think we've all been to something like that. If you've ever go to an improv show, sometimes you can just see it. You know, it just kind of happens. Maybe yeah. Maybe somebody tenses up, or they just forget what they're going to say or where they're going with it. The ability to build up a person like that and to make them look really good, it's just like this self-perpetuating cycle where then they start feeling better. They start forgetting maybe their stage fright or the fact that they're doing improv or that they can't remember, and they just go with the flow. And it can take a scene that might be a little bit drab or just not that great and turn it into an amazing scene with a lot of fun play. And you said something in there about you have to be a little bit weird. Yeah. I think some of the best scenes we've had were just absolutely bizarre. Just some of the weirdest things that you could think of.
Right. I forgot the weed is hitting at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I have anything?
Is the stage spinning for you right now?
I got it. One of those circle boards. What are those called?
Yeah.
Speaking of weed hitting, do you think you personally, could you do improv under the influence? Because you lose your inhibitions, which I guess can be positive and negative.
Yeah, I think so. When I did improv, I tended to do games more than anything. I wasn't a big fan of the more stringent requirements of some. I did try out for a couple. There was one that was kind of like a science fiction based one, and it was going to be more science fiction based improv. And I didn't get into that particular show, which is fine. The game stuff is what I had the most fun with, and I think that you can absolutely do games while drunk. I mean, I think that we do that now. If we play something like Among Us, or even kind of our, you know, you and I have the night we do PowerPoint stuff, we tend to try to get a little bit inebriated, and I think that just adds to the whole thing. It makes it a little bit more fun. So, yeah, I think so. Now, with THC, it makes me a little dizzy, so that wouldn't be too fun. But if it hit right, perhaps.
Yeah. Also, life hack. If you don't know what drunk PowerPoint is, it's so much fun. What you do is before presentations, like preferably a day, not like right before, you make a PowerPoint on literally anything. I've done like 22 ways to cook a potato. Like, that was one of the things I did. And then you get drunk, and then everybody presents the PowerPoints, which it is, hilarity ensues, because some people just fall off the rails. Some people are super intense about it, and it's just an all around good time. So as things are opening up and people are gathering again safely, it might be a fun party idea.
You were saying a day before. I thought you were going to suggest to everybody to start drinking the day before. I was like, Jay, that's a terrible, terrible idea.
You need to go into it with a raging headache, that's completely right. Dehydrated.
Hair of the dog that bit you, you'll be fine, though. So.
Just shot of Everclear, start presenting.
I like the idea that we make presentations and then give that presentation to somebody else. That sounds like, I mean, right? Because that's going to require that other person to just run with whatever they're given. And it sounds like so much fun.
Oh, yeah, that's good improv.
Yeah, exactly.
I also think that in making the PowerPoint, that's another thing of making them look good. You don't want to try to like dog them and make them look stupid, because then that's fun for no one.
No, I agree with you. I think it'll be more fun if it's something that's a little bit more open. Right. It needs to be kind of an open topic that somebody could take and run with it. But I think the whole idea is still, it's heavily based on improv. I think it'd be really, really fun to perform.
Well, thank you so much for joining, Blake. This was a grand old time. Do you have anywhere that people can find you online that you want them to?
Well, I kind of have a Twitter account. I don't check it too much, but I don't know. I don't think so. Tweet me a good old tweet. It's just Blake_Reinhardt. I used to stream, but I've kind of gotten out of streaming itself. So, yeah, drop me a line on the tweets. Oh, I think I have like 20 followers, so it'll be really cool to have more.
If you get 21 after this, you're on your way.
Oh, I know.
You're going to be an influencer.
Oh, good. What would I influence? That sounds so scary.
And under the influencer, that's me.
It's true.
Oh my God. Learn something new every day.
Is that a sex joke?
Under the... it is now. See, folks, this is improv.
That's right.
Oh man. Okay. If you would like to keep up with Highbrow Theater, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and also you can head on over to @HighbrowTheater on Twitter. And we have a Patreon. If you Google Highbrow Theater and Patreon, you can head over there to see a number of wonderful benefits that are offered. And thanks again for coming on, Blake, and thank you all so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Did you want me to say bye, too?
Yeah, I'm keeping this in. Go ahead and say bye.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jay. Really appreciate it. Bye, everybody. Oh, and make sure to go subscribe on Patreon the highest amount possible.
Oh, wait. I want TurboTax to start screaming. Oh, I guess we have to.
Much money.
You're right. Okay, bye.
Bye.